11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hey folks, it is Monday, May 30th. You are listening to episode 8 of the Beyond the Handle podcast. I am your host, Alan, also known as @Slip on Twitter. That's Slip with five eyes, or Slip. On today's episode, I have yet another very special guest from Winnipeg's Twitter community. I have Suzanne Sexton. She goes by the handle @SuzakiTheAmazon on Twitter. And we talk at length about politics, both in the city of Winnipeg, as well as across the province. And we also talk about a national politics. Suzanne is a pretty strong conservative voice on Twitter. She is not shy to admit that she is a Harper fangirl. And we get into a pretty good discussion about her thoughts on political matters across the country, as well as local to us in the city and the province. Last week's episode with Brian Grebe was another great episode of Beyond the Handle. Thank you very much to Brian for participating. We got a lot of great feedback on that episode, as well as on episode 6 with Travis Rubinick from Arctic Ice Hockey and from the Jet Stream podcast. I've been out of town for 2 weeks, but have managed to post the shows and got those interviews done in advance, and really appreciate the feedback and hope that you all enjoyed listening and that you will enjoy listening to today's episode as well. One correction from the Brian Grebe episode that I really think I need to mention, even though hopefully no one noticed it, at least no one called it out. At one point in our conversation, I referred to St. James as being on the east side of Winnipeg, and that is incorrect. It is on the west side of Winnipeg. And a Winnipeg-centric podcast really should make sure that the facts are straight, so wanted to clarify that. My apologies to those of you both in St. James, as well as for those of you in Transcona for mixing the two areas up. Anyway, with all that being said, let's get into the interview. This is Suzanne Sexton @SuzakiTheAmazon here on Beyond the Handle. All right, welcome everybody to episode 8 of Beyond the Handle, and another very special guest in the studio with me who is kind enough to wait until after the Jets game was over, and the Jets won 5-2 tonight. I have Suzanne Sexton here, known on Twitter as @SuzakiTheAmazon. Is that?
Yeah, that's right.
That's the right way to say it. So, what is the story behind SuzakiTheAmazon?
Well, in Greek, when you add "aki" to the end, it's like a suffix, and it kind of means in small pieces. But when you say it to a person, it's kind of like saying "sweetie." So it means like Susie, sweetie. It's a term of endearment for someone you're familiar with. It would be an insult to someone you don't know. And then the Amazon, I'm freakishly tall. I'm 6'3 when I'm wearing heels. And so just kind of slap them together. So, yeah, the friendly giant, I guess.
Yeah. And you have, is this something that your people call you off of Twitter as well?
People do call me Suzaki. I worked for a Greek family for many years, so I do answer to Suzaki. There are people that think that's my real name in the city, so.
Then when people see you, hey, Suzaki.
Yeah, I answer to it.
And you started on Twitter in about 2009, you said?
Yeah. You know what? I didn't have a clue what Twitter was about. I was looking at new things, social media. I signed up. I literally followed the Vikings, the Dallas News, and a couple of other newspapers. I just didn't get the concept of what Twitter was all about. I still had Facebook brain back then. So wasn't doing much with it. And then slowly over the years, kind of came back to it probably about 2011, 2012, and I was using it for awful jokes and some rants, so it's kind of like real life, I guess.
So why the Dallas News?
Yeah. My parents live in Texas in the wintertime. They're snowbirds. Okay. So it was my way of just collecting news sources so that I could have everything in one place, so I could follow everything from everywhere at once. So that's how I tried to use it, and Vikings. And then I got all the crazy Vikings fans following me, people sending me Vikings haikus and show me your purple, and but we're past that now.
And you've been to training camp but not to a game yet, right?
Yeah.
Including, like, in no away games, nothing?
No, I've never been to an NFL game. I love it, but never. But training camp is really cool. I would recommend any Viking camp fan go. It's in Mankato. It's awesome. It's a very close-knit community. There's lots of activities going on, and it's really cool to sit for an entire weekend or a few days and watch training. You get to learn what people are all about and what they're capable of.
And you are a big Bombers fan? You had season tickets for a while?
Yeah, I love the Bombers. I kind of joke often that I'm a football season agnostic because I pray and I don't think anyone's listening to me. But yeah, love them. I criticize them too, but that's how things get better. Criticism can help if it's not done in a destructive way. So.
And what would be a Beyond the Handle podcast without criticizing our local sports teams, of
that's
course?
That's right.
You grew up outside of Winnipeg in Pinawa?
I'm a Pinawanian, yes. I'm an Atomic Energy brat. So basically, I spent every Saturday of my life in Winnipeg. I identify as a Winnipegger easily, so.
Were you born and raised in Pinawa?
Born in Winnipeg, in a hospital in Winnipeg, and grew up there, and came to Winnipeg to go to university when I graduated.
So what's it like growing up in Pinawa?
Gorgeous. It's a chunk of a golf course on an island surrounded by, you know, the Winnipeg River, so it's beautiful.
You still go back?
Absolutely. Every Sunday.
Okay. And you came to Winnipeg for university?
I ended up with a Winnipeg boy. I stayed, and now my life is here. My parents are in Pinawa half of the year, so it's good. I love Manitoba, absolutely. It's probably one of the most beautiful places in the world. We're very negative about it, but really, I mean, besides minus 40, what do we really have to complain about?
I get some interesting opinions from people when I travel about Winnipeg, which is, I think people see it as a place they fly over when they go from Toronto and Vancouver, but I recommend people definitely visit here, even though it's cold. Come here in the summer, or come here in the winter and enjoy the Jets.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or a nice winter day, like we've had a lot this winter. You turned into a pet mom?
Yeah.
Not too long ago?
Yeah, just last year. And I have always said that I would never become one of those pet parents. And my dog is now my baby, absolutely.
What kind of dog is it?
Great Pyrenees. Yeah. So it's 120 pounds of white hair. It's great.
What made you decide it was time to get a giant dog?
Well, I moved to the hood. So to save money to go to school, I moved to the hood, and it was a little bit bigger jump in culture than I expected. And you really kind of do need a dog to some extent. I've had some pretty weird incidents. So I've been actually looking for 2 years because I want to be responsible and I want the right dog. I almost went for a Doberman Waimea cross, but there was some attitude issues. So I just waited and I found the best Great Pyrenees ever. Just a silly, silly, fluffy dog, but insanely protective naturally. Named Thatcher, so, you know, it's got a little bit of assertiveness to it.
And this is Thatcher, named after Margaret Thatcher?
Yeah, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. The neighbors call her Maggie, so, yeah, definitely.
You said in the questionnaire, you were telling some story about Thatcher doesn't have any shyness about in certain situations?
Well, we can be walking. I live in the West End, so we're walking around Core area in the West End, and he'll literally walk up to a 300-pound thug, or not to discriminate, but thug, you know, put his nose in this bare butt crack of the pants hanging down the back, and has no fear. But yet, when a cute little baby or a toddler toddles towards him and has that kind of wobble step going on, absolutely terrified, runs for his life. And parents are like, why is your dog afraid of my darling, sweet child? And they think you're the worst person ever. So, I don't know. I didn't do that. That was in the dog. I take no responsibility.
And to the core, is your dog like a suck or?
No, hardcore. Yeah. Like, very protective. I mean, I had 4 police officers on my step last week, and Thatcher would not let them near me, so.
Where were you before you moved into
I lived in Westwood. I lived by St. Charles Golf Course, so. It's a big difference.
I've seen on your Twitter stories from the hood, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
Well, I didn't know. Apparently in Winnipeg, there's this unwritten law that if you live on the west side of Arlington, the West End is great. And if you live on the east end, prepare for death. So I didn't know this. So I found this great older house wanted to live there. It's within walking distance of UW. I thought this is the perfect place to live, and I had no idea. And I moved in a couple months before the whole Sean Lamb serial killer thing. Okay. Those bodies were being found on my street. This was part of my experience. Welcome to the neighborhood. We have a serial killer. But that whole process ended up cleaning up the neighborhood immensely. We had a massive police presence for many days. A lot of the drug trade left. When drug trade leaves, the prostitution leaves, the vandalism, young people and gangs kind of stuff, they leave. When that commerce leaves, they leave with it. Mm-hmm. So it made a big difference. We also had an arson issue the next summer, and WPS was lovely. We had a foot patrol, we had extra patrol cars, and using provincial legislation, we've also been using our neighborhood safety coordinator to get rid of things like crack houses and party houses. So it's a much calmer neighborhood. It's very quiet. There's a lot of very dedicated people that work on, you know, the Daniel McIntyre St. Matthews board. A lot of people in that community are making great strides, and they are making it very livable and very nice. So I'm enjoying it.
So is this? Do you think that this is a model for, we always hear about what a mess downtown is, and it's unsafe. Is this, do you think, the right model to fix things, or do you think that there are other pieces that need to be put in place?
Well, I have to give WPS a lot of credit on this one, because they were fabulous to work with, and they put the focus on the area, and like I said, when you take some of that commerce out of the neighborhood, all of the little other gang things, the vandalism things, they leave. So it became from having stabbings and murders, baseball bat murders, people getting shot. I mean, the city councilor, Harvey Smith, lived on my street. There was a man shot in front of his home. I mean, you know, that kind of stuff is really stopping. And that's a lot to do with WPS putting focus on the neighborhood, having people on the street, having extra patrol cars. And so when I hear current city councilors wanting to cut police budgets, I do get a little tense, because I've seen it work very, very well. And I think there are other neighborhoods that could benefit from it, and it's a shame that they're not going to. I understand that cutting the budget and keeping taxes low really sells in the suburbs. I was from the suburbs. I get it. It sells. But I think we have to think of Winnipeg as a whole some days and be a little less selfish when we put our agenda out there.
Okay. And you, who did you support in the last election? You were campaigning pretty hard for...
I was 100% for Paula Havixbeck. And now when I hear people complaining about Bowman's tax raises, I just have to say, you didn't listen to me. I don't say I told you so, because, you know, that's mean. But really, we had options, and people were ignoring them because they didn't see momentum there. But we had really carefully well-thought-out options that we didn't go with, and we got the best of what was possible. I'm very excited. You know, I think that we have great possibilities with the current administration, so let's hope that good things come from it.
Before we're going to get into politics, I think, quite a bit here. Before we do that, though, you said that you were a football season agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned that you used to have a Pope Francis crush, as you described it.
I think Pope Francis is dreamy. I don't know. You know, I'm not big into organized religion. I grew up basically an atheist in, you know, a town devoted to science with atomic energy. And, you know, I love listening to swamis talk about, you know, energy and life. I love listening to priests talk about morals and ethics and, you know, that kind of thing. I enjoy it. But Pope Francis, he's just like, I don't know, he's the Gretzky rookie card for the Catholic Church. Okay. I mean, until recently, when he trampled on freedom of speech after the Je Suis Charlie incident, I was really loving the guy.
And before that incident, what were other things that you liked about him?
Well, he's very modest. He's very humble. He wants to bring the Catholic Church into the modern era, and I'm not a Catholic, so I'm not speaking for them. But there was many things like that I liked. And, you know, you hear the stories about him hugging people and touching people, and he doesn't want to be separated from people. The work that he did in his home before he became Pope, I was really impressive. A very humble man.
I was surprised when you said that you actually aren't officially affiliated with any political party, that you're kind of...
I'm not.
And again, based on every, like, what I've seen on Twitter, because you are, you know, quite political on Twitter.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, what's kind of your approach to politics in general?
Well, it's very fair to call me conservative. I believe in the economy, justice, fairness. I believe in values. So I really dig that. I'm digging the Stephen Harper thing. I'm a fangirl. I admit it. But, you know, I think that I have more to offer when I'm not reined in by having to toe a party line, or I don't want to embarrass someone saying that's a member of this party and look what she's saying. I really think that the things I say, sometimes I'm allowed to have a little bit of bite, mm-hmm. and I can say it knowing that I'm not, you know, bringing dishonor to anyone. I can be snarky. I can be negative sometimes. Because like I said, sometimes criticism changes things. If we never criticize something, if we never look for something better, then we're never going to get better. So, you know, I'm not big onto, you know, some topics of being critical for the sake of being critical, but it can bring about positivity. So.
And what are the kind of, what are the things that you like the most about Stephen Harper?
Well, like I said, I'm a big fangirl. So I'm a justice kid. I studied justice and law enforcement, and I wanted to go into rehab psychology. So I have a lot of strong feelings about that. Life means life. When I heard that that was happening, I was literally jumping up and down. I find that thrilling that someone gets that concept, that realizes there are some people so damaged and so, crimes so heinous and so, how do you say it, cruel, that they really, there isn't a chance of rehabilitation with some people, and we can't keep putting communities at risk. Sean Lamb, the gentleman that lived on my street, that wrapped the bodies in plastic and dumped them on my street, he'd been convicted 90 plus times, and he always got out. 90 plus for dangerous convictions. Why did that happen? You know, why is he going back out there and having the opportunity to kill more people or to hurt more people? That shouldn't have happened. There should have been something there. I think it's very difficult for the dangerous offender status to be assigned to someone. So giving judges options like this, I like big time.
Do you have any opinion? Again, I'm probably venturing into controversial territory here, but do you have an opinion on the Vince Lee situation?
I do, actually. I don't have a lot of confidence in pharmaceuticals. Like I said, I'm a kid of science. I grew up in atomic energy. I'm an atomic energy brat. I really don't think that it's fair to the general population to say, he's all better now. Here, have him back. I'm not being a jerk. I understand mental illness. I have friends that have suffered dearly. But there's a difference between being ill and being criminally ill. If you can't guarantee general population safety, and you're trying to say that these pharmaceuticals are magic beans and it can never possibly happen, he can't have a bad day, you know, he won't be under extreme stress, I don't believe it. I'm sorry, I don't believe it. We've seen people making these judgments that release people before make errors. Judges, parole boards, they're made up of humans, they make mistakes, and those mistakes take lives sometimes. So I'm not confident with decisions like that. I'm really not.
So what in this case, what would you think the solution is? Does he stay in jail? Does he stay in supervised treatment?
I don't know if jail is the right place for him. He is ill. I don't think that jail is the correct place for him. But yeah, definitely he should be in a supervised place, not a halfway house or what have you, that he can come and go. I really don't think that's appropriate for the situation. I mean, the RCMP officer that first came across the scene was so haunted by how horrific the scene was that he killed himself. So I think that that's not something we can consider in the realm of normal human behavior that can be brought back into line.
For people out there that don't, you know, I assume that everyone is relatively familiar with the case, but
yeah.
there was a young man that was traveling on a Greyhound bus, and when that bus was going through Portage la Prairie, Manitoba, somebody that was sitting near him ended up beheading him.
Yeah.
And basically
eating him. Yeah.
And this was a story, I guess it's been about 6 or 7 years now since it's taken place, but that's the incident that we're talking about here. So Vince Lee is now, they're trying to decide, or I don't know if they have decided.
They have decided. He will be released into the community in a halfway home. But also, is it fair to him? That's a lot of pressure. When he's out about during the day, he's a target. I mean, you saw, if you read the newspaper columns, the online comments after that decision, there are people that feel so insecure and so unsafe by a decision like that, that he's actually, you know, being threatened by the general public. So is that even in his best interest? I don't know. But I can't say that I have confidence in pharmaceuticals fixing something like that.
You said that you have a chip on your shoulder with media bias?
I do. You know what? We grow up and we don't notice these things. We're immersed in it. We're in it. We don't see it. And as you get older and you move around and you talk to more people and you learn new things, you start to notice things. So me in Canada, I notice there is a liberal media bias. That's not a popular thing to say. And a lot of people are screaming right now listening to this. But it's true. There are a lot of people in the media that are covering fantastic stories, and they are not on television. They're not part of any media corporation. People like Vivian Krause in BC, she's going through and finding the funding for all these fake environmental charities that are really fronts for something like Tides International and George Soros. They're fronts to cause, you know, anti-government disruption, to create the appearance of, you know, ill will in the Canadian public. I don't like it. And she's uncovered that by using people's tax records. She worked for 2 years on that, not getting paid, not, you know, on her own. There's another gentleman, Greg Renouf. He kind of infiltrated the most extreme parts of, you know, the NDP union bloc. They actually even had a terrorist training camp, Camp Hollyhock. So he went in basically undercover saying, I want to participate in this. They brought him in. He studied with them. He learned, you know, all of these, you know, counter-government techniques. And then he started writing about it and blogging about it. And then the death threats started coming into him. And he's still covering the scene. And he's bringing up a lot of really interesting things. Some of the people in those movements are getting paid very large salaries to promote violence. There are people in some of the anti-pipeline movements in BC right now that would be happy to take a human life to get their story on the front page. They would be happy for a loss of life to get that publicity. That's not right. And these people are being financed by Americans, Saudi Arabians, Russians, hiding under the guise of, you know, environmental causes. And the money's just being funneled through these organizations. So very often when people are complaining about, oh, Stephen Harper's attacking charities by looking at tax records, no, Stephen Harper's keeping international foreign interference out of our domestic bliss. You know, it's fake. It's theater. You know, a lot of these protests are paid professionals. If you look at some of them in Toronto, it's the same people show up every time, and they're doing it for a salary. They don't even know what they're protesting. They get the email, they go, they get the check. So I'm not big on that. It's theater.
Do you, you know, and you said there are people out there that'll be screaming, and I think one of the things that they might be screaming is, they might say, like, are you a conspiracy theorist? Because whenever you're not sourcing a mainstream source, you're combing blogs and, you know, other sources, they might say you're, I guess, suggesting that you're falling into that trap. What would you say to people?
Well, Vivian Krause now has a column in the National Post. She's writing a book. She speaks around the world now. She's kind of seen as the forefront in looking through Tides money. Tides is an organization that funnels this money into environmental groups in Canada, and some of them don't really do very much. They're more of a political front, kind of like some of the things the unions are putting their money into now. So Greg Renouf, again, he does have a blog. He's quite well known. He is used as reference, but you're never going to see him on a TV show because, I mean, I don't know, it's almost libelous, just some of the things he said. And like I said, he gets death threats for the things that he says. People feel very scorned by the way he went in, immersed himself, took in all the information, and then threw it back out there to the general public and made them look awful. But I mean, general media, I mean, there's things happen that we never hear about because it doesn't fit with the narrative of the day. I think it's worse in the U.S. by a long shot, but I do see it in Canada where they present their version, especially things like Rogers Media. Pick up a Rogers Media magazine like Chatelaine or Canadian Living. Now flip through a year's worth of those and see how many pro-Justin Trudeau articles are in there and see how many articles that have anything with a candidate from the NDP or Conservatives in it. There aren't any. So, I mean, it happens. It's there. It exists. And if we admit it's there and we think about it, you know, open-mindedly, then I think that's a little better for all of us. You know, I have a small crush on a dead guy, too. Andrew Breitbart from the U.S. I'm sure everyone's heard the fantastic story of his death. You know, he threatened Obama. He said, I have video. I'm going to expose you before the next election. And 43 years old, walking down the street, drops dead. So that's kind of conspiracy theory stuff. Mm-hmm. But he's really changed the way that a lot of people look at media. And he's brought forth the idea of a conservative bias in media, that we should pay more attention. So we really should.
What would you say to people that would argue, again, as another argument against the being a liberal bias in the media, that, you know, the media are run by people that are very wealthy, who are probably more interested in upholding the status quo, and therefore making the media a little more conservative? Would you?
I don't know if there is a lot of that going on. I mean, there is quite a push. There are conservative news organ. I mean, look at Sun News. When Post Media bought them, they suddenly are done. But look what Ezra Levant did. I mean, they crowdfunded a news organization. They're owned by the people. I mean, that's legit. That's real. That's grassroots. That's pretty cool. I mean, I don't care if you like Ezra Levant or not. People, either you hate him or you love him. But I think that he just made something very genuine and true for Canadians. It's a real alternative voice. He's not owned by any media corporation. So he can say the emperor has new clothes and not fear any repercussions.
Where, if someone was to ask you where the best two or three accessible sources are for news that are outside of the mainstream, where would you direct them?
Ooh, I don't even know, because I like Twitter. I like to go through and pick things through. I mean, I have a gentleman from Nigeria that sends me newspaper articles from Nigeria about...
He's not writing you about an investment opportunity?
No. about... There actually is a political party in Nigeria in the election that actually has support, political support for Boko Haram. They want the government to lay off them, because they think the government created Boko Haram. So, I mean, I love Twitter for that. It's a place to gather information and share information. I get some wild and crazy things coming at me, too. So, yeah, I mean, I can have a Catholic scholar sending me something, and, you know, it's great. It's just the people that you wouldn't interact with in your normal day, building a thought community. You know, it's a global community. You share ideas. You meet people who are like you. You meet people that you're not like, and you get to exchange ideas. It's good.
All right, let's take a little break from the interview to go through some housekeeping items and give you some information about this show. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can look us up at Beyond the Handle is the handle for the show. So definitely give us a follow there. We are on Facebook. Do a search for Beyond the Handle and we will pop right up there for you. If you are not listening to this show via iTunes or Stitcher, you can go to each of those platforms and subscribe to the show. Again, just go in and search for Beyond the Handle. We will pop up there for you. Click on subscribe and the new episodes will download to your device every week as soon as they are posted, which is nice, easy, and convenient. Of course, if you just want to hear a stream of a specific episode, you can also go to beyondthehandle.podomatic.com and you can find the show right there and listen to any episode that you would like to hear. If you'd like to email me and give me some feedback, recommend a guest, or if you'd like to be a guest yourself, I'd love to hear from you. The email address is beyondthehandle@gmail.com. And again, any feedback via Twitter or via email is very much appreciated. So yes, please reach out to me. We are a part of the Garbage Hill Network of podcasts. This is Winnipeg's first podcast network and features a number of local podcasts from around the city of Winnipeg. You can give them a follow at Garbage Hill on Twitter. And their website is www.garbagehillnetwork.com. All of their podcasts are featured. Some of the ones that I've been listening to lately include Couch Surfing, Witch Police Radio, Loose Ropes Wrestling, and the No One Is Safe podcast. They all have Twitter handles as well, so definitely check out those shows. But you can find everything all in one organized place at the Garbage Hill Network. Again, that's www.garbagehillnetwork.com. So with all that being said, let's get back into the interview with Suzanne Sexton at Suzaki the Amazon. This is part two of our discussion here on Beyond the Handle. I was surprised that nowhere in the questionnaire that you filled out, and only during this interview, the first time you mentioned Mr. Justin Trudeau. Because I've seen you talking a lot about Mr. Trudeau on Twitter, and obviously not a big fan.
I'm not
a fan at all.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a hater. I'm a realist. And if he put a little more thought into his actions and his words, I'd lay off him a little bit. I have laid off him because people are tired. I literally have fatigued my friends so much, they just don't want to hear about it anymore. They're like, we get it, we're not voting for him. I see through it, I get it. But I do owe Justin a little bit of thanks. Thanks, Justin.
He's listening.
Yeah, because there was a couple years ago, he did a town hall and a question and answer session in my hometown, and I was quite upset with him because it was the day after he'd been talking about admiring China. So I went to that town hall armed with a couple hundred pictures of missing and murdered dissidents from China. And it was also a day or two after he was talking to school kids in Souris about drugs, saying that we should be legalizing drugs. And when you say that you're legalizing them, that's an endorsement. You're saying, I feel it's safe, so I'm going to endorse this. But kids don't need to hear that, especially in a setting like that. Their parents, their teachers are trying very hard to give them a message to stay away from that, and you're standing in a school saying, this is my platform, I feel so strongly about it, I'm willing to endorse this. It's not right. You don't have the parents' permission to say that in front of their children. So I was very angry with him. So I asked some questions. He didn't like it, and he couldn't answer. I asked him about Chuck Rafiki, his role in the Liberal Party. He's the owner of Tweed Corporation, who was a medical marijuana licensee given by the Harper government. But they're in a position where they took over the chocolate factory in Tweed, Ontario, to make medical marijuana. If Justin Trudeau is elected and legalizes pot, his friend, who's a very executive member of the Liberal Party, will be the first up and running to produce billions. I mean, their initial stock offer went out and was, what, 80-something million dollars? So we know that Justin Trudeau has to say, I own stock in this, but his wife does not have to say, I own stock in this. That's not going to be publicly released. So his policies always benefit his friends. We look at environmentalism with Greg Butts. We look at, in Ontario, the wind farms. That was bullshit. They canceled a gas plant that they needed to build wind farms that don't produce energy. And the guy that got the contract was the president of the Liberal Party of Ontario. Now, we're talking about like $900 million in yearly operating costs, and that's not producing energy. So now they're buying energy from other sources, and they still had to pay for the gas plant they canceled to build the wind farms.
Okay.
That's just corruption. And now speak to your friends in Ontario and ask them what happened to their hydro this year to pay for that. I mean, pensioners can't afford 20-30% increases. Young people can't afford 20-30% increases in hydro. Ontario already wasn't cheap with hydro. That's just pure corruption. That's I have problems with,
And now you mentioned, you know, Trudeau taking action that benefits him and his friends.
Yeah.
Is that something that's really unique to the Liberals or Trudeau, or do you think that that's something that permeates across all of our politics?
I think it's everywhere. I mean, we see it in Manitoba, too. But it's just so blatant with him. The only policies he had at that moment were things that were very favorable to his friends and the people that got him to the leadership. His judgment, I mean, I don't even have to go on a rant about his judgment. We've seen it. Even people that are pro-Trudeau have seen it. We understand. He flip-flops at his convenience. He thinks that we should be sending humanitarian aid to Iraq for ISIS. They do not need a blanket because they don't have a head. They're not alive anymore. You know, I just think it's very misguided and very childish sometimes. I really don't see him being a prime minister. I mean, you look at some of his advisors. He has a campaign organizer, Simon Jamal, in Calgary. I mean, she's involved with one of the most radical mosques in the country. She's involved with a protest that turned into a riot where pro-Israel supporters were beaten, and she had a peace award taken away from her because of her involvement with that, what turned into a riot and a beating. And she was cheering it on and made, you know, comments on Facebook about how awesome that was. And then when they took away her award, she was quite upset by it, and then suddenly she had nothing to do with it. These are the people that are fundraising and campaign organizing for Justin Trudeau. If that man becomes prime minister and he has the world's top elite security information coming into his head, and he has the security information coming from the Five Eyes countries of the world, is he going to share it with his bestie that, you know, do we trust the man? His judgment, he's off. So I have giant issues. And yeah, so I owe Justin because I had a chance to, you know, chat with him one day, and it didn't go well. He was not pleased with the way it turned out. People took pictures, and it did give me some of my following on Twitter, so.
And you're hoping that you'll have another chance at some point? Would you take the opportunity again to?
You know what? There was a couple times in Winnipeg this year, but it's not appropriate. If it's their event, I'm not going to make a scene. If you're having a real Q&A, a town hall where people are welcome to come and ask you questions about your intentions, I would definitely participate. But I'm not going to, I don't have a hate on for him. I want people to see the truth. And I'm finding that I have to do very little now because people are seeing the truth by his own actions. I'm really not worried. I think Canadians are waking up and realizing what a sham that coronation was.
Do you think that Justin Trudeau is the biggest threat to the Conservative Party right now? Do you think the NDP can make any noise at this point? Or
I don't think Justin Trudeau is a threat to the Conservative Party. Okay. I know that right now we're running neck and neck, but we always see that, and then when it comes to election time, there's that little spike that happens, and I'm confident. I think that his own actions are his legacy, and he's dug himself in deep already.
Something that I've personally argued, and I want to get your take on this, and is one of my biggest beefs with the Conservative Party, is that I feel that they dumb down our politics in terms of, I think that they are the best party in terms of putting the message out and sticking to it, by far.
Yeah.
But I feel that the message really kind of dumbs down our political discussion in this country. Would you agree with that?
Well, is there a particular topic you're feeling dumbed down upon? Are you talking lowest common denominator?
Let me think about this. The Michael Ignatieff is in it for himself.
He was.
And what was before? What's his name that was running before for the... Stéphane Dion. All I can think about is that bird shitting on his shoulder in the in the online ad, but yeah. That he's not fit to lead. And now Justin Trudeau is... again, I think that he's
in over
his head is the message, right? And that's what they stick to and drive home over.
Well,
and
Michael
Ignatieff
made it so easy. His life, again, was his legacy. I mean, he abandoned his children. He abandoned his countries whenever he had a greater opportunity. Is he American? Is he British? Is he Canadian? He doesn't choose. He's someone of all. He's a Lord of Britain, and he calls himself an American in his speeches. He did a commencement speech to a university, and he was talking about you can't live your life for other people. You owe it to yourself to live your life. And this man wanted to lead a country, and that's his personal mantra. I'm not impressed. Any man that could abandon his children like that, I don't see him leading a country.
You also said that you don't think that Canada needs unions as a political force.
I don't.
Do you think that there's room for unions in general? Do you think let's just say the idea of unions and what it's quote-unquote supposed to be. Do you believe in
that?
Well,
I don't think unions are going to disappear, but I don't think they're as needed as we think. I don't see that anyone is going to have such complete political control in this country, that they're going to repeal labor laws, that they're going to repeal workplace safety laws. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I feel quite confident in any government that would take over is not going to have that kind of mandate. So I don't think that we have to worry about children in coal mines anytime soon. I really don't think that the labor market here right now is in a position that we need to have that kind kind of bargaining going on. It's almost insulting when you find out that you pay money off your paycheck, and then you find out your union is actively using it to campaign politically against your values. I have a problem with that. If it's your choice, then I'm okay with that. If you choose to participate and give them your money, good for you, and they represent you, I'm very happy for you. That's great that you have that network behind you. But I would really like to see right-to-work legislation happening in Canada. I don't think it's fair people are forced to it. You're forcing people to remove part of their paycheck for a benefit they may or may not see, and then that money is used to politically campaign against their own values. I think that's corrupt. That's thuggery in my books, and I think that it should be up to people to choose. If I'm in a workplace that's unionized, I should choose whether I want to participate or not.
Have you been in a unionized workplace before?
No, because they don't exist in the industries I'm in.
Okay. Now, you said you made an example for, you know, children working in mines.
Yeah.
So obviously that's not the case.
Well,
now,
that's
we have an 8-hour workday, overtime legislation, all those pieces are in place.
I have a friend who's a Teamster working in rail, and he makes as much as a doctor, and they were going out on strike a couple weeks ago. Please, you didn't spend 8 years in university to do that job, and you make as much as a doctor, and you are striking for fair wages. I'm sorry, but I'm not buying it. I really think that maybe if they put their T4 slips on their strike signs, that people might see that their argument's a little bit differently.
Do you think that there is something to be said for the impact that unions have had historically to bring us
absolutely.
To this point?
Yes, absolutely. I'm not saying that they don't need to exist. I'm saying I don't think they should be a political force. They should not be interfering in politics. If you want collective bargaining in a workplace, great. Go for it. If you need a support system, I have worked with people that have left for other jobs and they've got their education paid for by a union. That's great. It's a beautiful thing if you want to participate. But why are they involved in politics? Look what's going on in Manitoba. 20% of the delegates for the leadership vote of the NDP party, which automatically choose the next premier of this province, were given to unions. And what does the provincial government do? It creates legislation that is pro-union. It's a stranglehold on business in Manitoba. It's preventing growth.
And you've spoken up quite a bit about problems in Manitoba being less competitive than other provinces, about young people leaving the province, that it's simply more expensive here and we're not getting the bang for our buck.
We are the highest taxed and we are the lowest serviced. We have the lowest scores in math and science. We have the least amount of emergency care, but yet we're the highest taxed. Where is that going? Why are we putting in multiple PR agents at over $100,000 a year to sell us policy that's not good for us from a government that can put it in whether we choose to or not? That's just wasting money. It's crap. We shouldn't be increasing the size of the civil service. Our population is not rising quickly. We actually have a negative immigration in the past few years. We're not getting immigrants coming here because we wouldn't participate with the federal immigration program. We were sticklers that wanted to do it my way or the highway. We wouldn't participate. We have people leaving for job opportunities. We have businesses closing, jobs leaving. And the cost of living here is not that cheap anymore. We're taxed to the to the butt.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that.
I like that you use technical terminology there.
Yeah, well,
to the butt.
I was going to say something awful and I stopped myself because I know I'm going to get in trouble with my mother.
you also mentioned that, I think this is a quote from the question there, personal responsibility is the cure for many modern woes. And you referenced a few things such as the environment, justice, divorce. Do you want to speak a little bit to that as well?
Well, I think that's one of the building blocks that we need to talk about. I mean, Canada has to have a talk with each other about culture. What kind of society do we want? What kind of values do we hold? I think having these kind of discussions, I mean, people in our generation, we don't talk about those things. We can't define them. I was on Twitter asking what Canadian values were, and nobody under 40 was responding to me because they'd never thought about it. It was too hard to come up with a blurb, right? Because they'd never paid attention to it. So, yeah, I mean, personal responsibility. If I feel responsible for my actions, I'm not going to interfere in your life. I'm not going to harm you. I'm not going to cost money through justice. If I feel personally responsible for my health, I'm going to, the government's going to spend less money on me. And things like we were talking about before, divorce. If you are responsible for yourself, if you're a mature, grown-up adult responsible for yourself, you're less likely to be divorced. If we're mature, responsible adults who, make wise choices, we're less likely to harm the environment. We're going to make better choices. And better choices lead to better society in general.
So where does that personal responsibility come from? How do I, if I, as a child, let's say, how do I develop that?
Well, that's the thing. Not everyone's blessed with good parents. Every parent is a nice parent, but you know what I mean? Like, they have the best intentions. They might not have the skills, or they might not have the experience themselves. So why don't we have things in schools to talk about concepts like this? I was lucky. I had great teachers that did talk about things like this. I had great parents that were clued into things like this because they were from an older generation. But I think a lot of times kids are raised by TV and video games. They're, let's go shoot bad guys. What's going on with the Kardashians? But when you ask them what your values are, they don't know what you're talking about. And when people don't feel entitled to things, when people realize I earn the things that I have, I feel satisfaction from doing that, those kinds of concepts, I think that creates a different kind of society. And we'll see it in justice, like I said, environment. When you make better choices, better things happen.
The part that I don't understand in this argument, though, is that there's preaching for personal responsibility, and I'm with you. I think that first and foremost, people are responsible for their own actions.
Yeah.
But to get that sense, it's like it appears. It's like that you're just supposed to have it. And I don't think that that's something that you're supposed to have. I think that that's an investment for multiple parties. So the first place people look at is the parents.
Yeah.
But you're right. That's just
you can't
not
count
always
going
to exist. So if you can't count on the parents, now you're looking at teachers or your community?
It should be in the curriculum, definitely. Okay. And again, in the community, there's lots of service organizations, guides, scouts, those kinds of things. They're excellent at teaching things like that, but not every child has the opportunity. Not every kid can play sports and learn about those things. Mm. So we do have the opportunity to talk to every child in school. I don't think that we should be telling people how to raise their children. I don't. That's up to them. But we can talk about concepts like this the same way we teach science concepts. We can talk about cultural concepts. And I think that's an important thing that we should be looking at in the future.
Is it like a social studies thing, or is it
further than that? I guess you'd throw it there. Citizenship kind of, I don't know.
Okay. Is this something, and again, as a conservative, the typical idea of a conservative is save money, to try to don't spend what you don't need to spend. Do you think that this is a place where there should be heavier investment?
Well, schools are not so much a federal expense.
Yes, but as a provincial expense?
I don't know if we're really talking about large terms of dollars in curriculum. I know from other curriculums that have been developed for regular courses, it's not that big of an investment. And if we're going to use it for generations, why don't we just get it over with? I mean, we're building schools in places that don't have growth in population, so I think that there's money to be put into something like that. They're building blocks for the future. I consider it, what do you want to call it, human infrastructure.
You said you didn't like being called the Canadian Ann Coulter. that was the one thing that really bothered
you? Time. I play with trolls. I engage the trolls because it's sporting. I like it. Very often are people so crazy that you just go, oh, this is a waste of my time. I feel bad, but this person called me the Canadian Ann Coulter, and I was upset because I find her vile. I really do. I think she pushes the envelope. I think that's part of her shtick. Not a fan. Not at all. Okay. Just because someone's on this right side of the line doesn't mean that a person here is the same as the person, 50 meters past the line. So I didn't like that at all.
Okay. And how would you separate yourself from Ann Coulter? Or is it just more so that you're your own person, you're not defined by
Yeah.
By who someone else is.
Well, I think she's a hateful being. Okay. Yeah, and I think she likes to push buttons. I don't mind talking about contentious subjects, but I'm not a hurtful person whatsoever. And I'm not looking for controversy. I'm looking for progress. So I really didn't like that at all.
Okay, I'm going to challenge you for something here. To say something nice about either our provincial NDP, or I know you've also had a lot to say about in the States with the Mr. Obama. So what's one good thing that you think is happening from those that are in power right now outside of the Conservative Party?
Well, the provincial NDP did give us the Safer Communities Neighborhood Act that helped clean up neighborhoods like mine, that allows prosecutors to get rid of things like crack houses and party houses. That is a brilliant piece of legislation. So there's one thing. I mean, who can criticize Greg Selinger's hair? I mean, really.
Okay, I'll go with that.
I mean, that's a positive thing, so...
Speaking up for or against.
I can say that at one time I was very enthused by Barack Obama. I was literally sitting in a dentist's office in Nuevo Progreso, Mexico, and I was watching him on a little TV screen up in the corner, and I thought, wow, this man really can speak. He's a great orator. And I was watching, this was before he had even declared that he would be running for the Democratic nomination, and I was just so damn impressed with him. He was smooth. So, I mean, he does have the gift of the gab. His time has rolled on. Not a fan. I mean, we see so much. I really have a problem with immigration amnesty. It's creating problems. It's putting people at risk. It's not fair to people who immigrate legally. And it really is going to harm the economy in the long run.
Sorry, just as a quick counterpoint, just to get your reaction to it.
Yeah.
You can't really turn the tide on this. You've got so many people that are quote-unquote illegally in the States at this point. It's going to be just practically impossible to ship them out, for example.
It's one thing if they're there, but when they go about advertising this in Uruguay, Honduras, these places, and you suddenly go from having 5,000 people a month crossing the border to having 60,000, 100,000 per month crossing the border, when there are parents shipping their children with basically dealers to get their children to America so that their children can have immigration amnesty so that their parents can then come. These children are put at great risk. The people coming there, I don't know if you've ever watched any of the documentaries on what it takes to get there. Mm-hmm. I have someone in my life whose family went through that. It's quite a horrifying thing. You're really not responsible as an administration to promote that. And there's evidence that it was somewhat promoted in those countries, and that's why we had the influx suddenly.
Okay.
You can look at other things too, like some of Obama's campaign donors, they own prison stock. So companies that are holding these immigrants in these holding cells that are getting, you know, millions of dollars in emergency funding from the federal government are the people that donated to his campaign. So sometimes you have to question his motives. Also, we know about what kind of, you know, that breeds affection. They will be Democratic voters in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, as knowing people in border towns in Texas where my parents live that came there the hard way and made it the right way, they don't like it. And if your economy's tanking like that, why are you bringing in that many people when you have no jobs? That's a little bit irresponsible to me. The money has got to come from somewhere.
Okay.
So I just find that irresponsible.
I want to talk a little bit about a cause that you made reference to, and I know you've tweeted a lot about our armed forces, honoring our armed forces. Do you think that we do that properly?
I think we're getting better. I think Aaron O'Toole is doing a great job. We've seen some major policy progress. We're seeing some veterans being treated with respect, which is a good thing. But my friend Corinne did this amazing thing her brother's army. Her husband was Italian army. She lives in Italy. And she saw the need for some Canadians that had been buried in the cemeteries around her. Mm-hmm. She wanted to honor them with a Canadian flag. It's a long story. I won't go into how she got there. But a family member asked her to look for someone that he'd served with. And she went around to the graveyards around her in Italy and found the grave. Posted things on Commonwealth Graves Commission because she realized that some people just weren't posted, and found Canadian families. So she asked on Facebook for 7 flags or 10 flags for the families of Canadians that she'd found and were in contact with. So within that first hour, I read that, I talked to her, and I took it to Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Hey, Canada, can you help me? We have this idea. We really want to honor these people that sacrificed their lives and, you know, provided our freedom." Because in the old days, they didn't repatriate bodies. So now they do, so it's not a common thing.
Okay.
But we said, "We're collecting flags from home. We want Canadian flags." She couldn't get many of them in Italy. And within 2 hours, we had, like, thousands.
Flags?
Yeah. Nice. You know, and asking media people, politicians, you know, we had Brad Wall retweeting it. We had Brian Pallister retweeting it. We had CTV retweeting it. So it went fast, and we had a lot. We were not expecting that. I feel bad for Corinne because I took her nice, beautiful heart, and I put her through a lot of work because I blew it up. She had no intention of that.
Yeah.
And Twitter, you were amazing. You knocked it out of the ballpark on that one. So we actually had NATO Special Forces commanders come. They did a service for the first time in Coriano Ridge Graveyard. It was very emotional. It still is. Unfortunately, the gentleman that started it all, mm-hmm. Morley Rooney, he did pass away this year just before Remembrance Day.
Okay.
So this was kind of a low-key year. But I would encourage everyone to follow Corinne Fraser and Flags from Home because it's just a great, great project.
So aside from this being a great story that blew up through Twitter,
yeah.
And this podcast always comes back to Twitter in the end, what else do you enjoy about Twitter?
I just like meeting new people. Like I said earlier, we're creating, a community of thought. We're creating a global community of thought. That's really cool. And you also get to interact with people that you wouldn't meet and cross paths with in your real life. So it's giving us all broader horizons to make decisions from and to make choices from. I just think that's great. I think the speed that information comes at us is absolutely amazing. When breaking events happen,
mm-hmm.
you have it instantly. You have multiple sources instantly. And if you're picky, yeah, you can pick through your sources and look to make sure that they're backed up. I mean, we've seen some instances where false things have been spread really quickly, but I think in general, it's a positive thing. I do have a problem with the fake accounts, too.
Okay.
The shit disturbers who hide. Just why bother? You know, why bother? Show your face. You know, be a grown-up.
Stand behind what you say.
Yeah, exactly.
Even, yeah, if you have an opinion, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you wholeheartedly there. We were talking about that a little bit before we recorded, and it's like,
yeah.
If there's things that you don't want to put out there, then don't put them out there, but otherwise, yeah. Be yourself and stand behind what you say. I totally agree
exactly.
with you there. Well, I appreciate you having you coming on and doing Beyond the Handle, and I appreciate having met you through Twitter. I know this is the first time I've met you in person, but we've been back and forth for a couple of years now, and always appreciate debating with you and also agreeing with you on a lot of things as well. So
yeah.
I don't know if there's any last things you want to say before we sign off.
Oh, thank you very much for the opportunity. And you went easy on me today. You didn't force me to go Ann Coulter, so.
We try to keep it light enough here. That's the purpose of the show.
And we stalled long enough that we didn't jinx the Jets. So.
We waited. Yeah,
yeah,
you were kind enough to wait to not jinx the Jets for sure, which is great. I'm hoping that as we get closer to an election time, I might see if I can pull a couple of people in here to talk, so maybe it'll get a little bit more heated. Then I know what side
we should have a debate.
Yeah,
honestly,
and I know what side I'll bring you in to represent. I'm sure you'd be happy to do so. So
absolutely,
yeah, everybody can look forward to that. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
So there you have it. A lot of talk about politics around the city and the province, as well as across the country with Suzanne Sexton on Beyond the Handle. She can again be found at Suzaki the Amazon on Twitter. You should give her a follow, whether you agree or disagree with her political views. She has a very strong voice, and I've learned a lot about many political matters from her, and she is very open to discussion, as always, as we all need to be on Twitter. Respectful and open debate is actively encouraged. So by all means, give her a follow and say hello. And if you would rather not discuss politics, she is a big football fan. Go Vikings, go Bombers, and we'll probably also talk to you about Jets. Anyways, go and check her out. That is it for this week's episode. And as always, we feature a different band every week, and this week on Beyond the Handle is no exception. The band is called Zen Mystery Fog. They are from Vancouver and a part of a record label called Kingfisher Blues. I had a chance to check out a lot of Kingfisher Blues music when I was in Vancouver over the last week, and it is fantastic. As always, you can find them over at Bandcamp. Just look up Zen Mystery Fog. Fog is with two G's. Or you can also look up Kingfisher Blues, B-L-U-E-Z Records, and you can find a lot of great music from the West Coast. So anyways, this is a track called Semitones and Half Truths. It is by Zen Mystery Fog. Thank you once again to all of you who have listened and provided me with feedback, and we will see you all in a week on another episode of Beyond the Handle.